The Walking Dead Season 6, Episode 11, Knots Untie is over, but we are not done talking about it here on The Walking Dead Book Club. Hello, everybody. I'm Josh Wigler. I am joined here by the person who is going to help me untie everything from this episode, Jessica Leese. What's going on, Jess?
Ah, not much.
I don't know how far we will be able to throw this, but I think it would be uncool if we did not try to just pull it along for the rest of this podcast.
Yeah, well, you roped me into it.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I will untie the knots jokes at this point, at this juncture. Jess, what's going on? How you doing?
I'm doing well. It's what a great episode for comics readers.
It was cool.
It's just like reading a book and watching the movie of it and seeing everything that you've seen in the book on screen.
Totally. And
this was such a good episode for that.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, there's certainly like big blockbuster moments that have been adapted from the comics to the show before that. I don't think that you could say there was any like major, major blockbuster moments in this one in quite that way, like the attack on the prison. Although seeing the hilltop for the first time is iconic. But I think just in terms of it being kind of like a spitting image or a pretty close reflection of the comics, this is one of the most uncanny resemblances between the show and the comics that I can remember.
Yeah, I was so excited. I was completely geeking out about, oh my god, it looks just like the comics. These people look just like the people in the comics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely cool on that level. So we'll pick that apart. We'll talk about the hilltop. We'll talk about getting there, what that means for the future of the show and what some of these new characters might mean for the future of the show and how they're going to impact certain characters that we've come to know and love over the past several years. But just to set things up, in case you are new to the Walking Dead Book Club, we say this every time. This is a spoiler zone. This is the podcast that you listen to if you have read the Walking Dead comics on which the show is based, or if you don't really care and you want to hear about what's going on in the comics and you want to hear how that impacts the show, this is the podcast for you. But if you're not into any of that stuff, if you are not caught up on the comics through issue 143, I believe is as far as that we are talking about here on Walking Dead Book Club, I strongly recommend you turn away, because we are going to get into a whole bunch of stuff that will probably be happening this season or certainly beyond this season. And some of them are minor spoilers, some of them are massive spoilers. Some of these things may never come to pass because the show and the comics are not always lining up perfectly with one another, but it's all fair game here. So that's the spiel. That's what we'll get into. But let's just start, you know, pretty basically, I think pretty mildly, pretty tamely, I think we could just talk about how freaking awesome it was to see the hilltop and how much it really did look like a Charlie Adlard picture come to life.
Yeah, it was beautiful. You had your big house on the hill, and you had your big wall with the guys with spears and the chickens and the blacksmith.
Yep.
It was a thing of beauty. Like, they really, the attention to detail is astonishing.
It was awesome. Like, just even, like, seeing the Barrington house and, like, going back, and if you look at the comics and you see that stuff and you just, it's so one for one. A lot of the dialogue is very, very similar, but just that first shot of the hilltop when you're past the gates, it's so perfectly from the comics. And it was really, I was just awestruck looking at that thing. I was so blown away by it that the show has such great production detail to begin with, but the fact that they were able to, I don't know, that they were able to find that place. Is it a real place? I mean, how did they do this? It looks exactly like the books.
They had to have just found a house that looked enough like it that they could fudge the rest.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was incredible. I mean, there's just a quick Google search of Barrington House shows me a Barrington House bed and breakfast in North Carolina that looks like similar-ish, but it's not the actual thing. But it just looks beautiful. It's stunning. I want to know where they shot that thing. I want to go hang out there. I want to go camp out in one of those rooms that they've converted. It was so cool.
Yeah, well, I've got to ask, did you see the Cracked.com article this week that was a first-person account of someone that lives in the town where they shoot a lot of The Walking Dead?
No, tell me about it.
They talk about how they live in a small town in Georgia, and large chunks of this show that, you know, even locations that are supposed to be hundreds of miles apart are all shot within like a few blocks radius in this one small town.
Okay.
And they talk about how in some ways it's been really great for the town, in other ways it's been really awful because they pretty much have to work around whenever filming is in town. They have to not move anything that's in the streets, and it all looks you know, totally trashed because it's post-apocalyptic.
Right.
And there's also the fact that now it's become a tourist destination.
So a lot of people are showing up.
Right. Like people just show up and all of the downtown shops that used to be useful to the people that lived in the town are now like overrun with people selling zombie crap.
Okay.
It's sort of like the Forks, Washington of Georgia.
Oh, no. That's a very unflattering comparison.
It really is.
So that's unfortunate. That's what's the name of the town? It's I'm looking this up right now.
Yeah.
Woodbury. It's actually Woodbury, Georgia.
Yeah, part of it is in Woodbury, and then part of it was in...
Sanoa?
Sanoa.
Sanwa?
Yeah, or Sanoa, I think.
Yeah. That's cool. That's really awesome. Yeah, I can't imagine that this is going to help, because I think people are really going to want to see this house. Like, I think people are really going to want to see what this is all about. But I can imagine, if your hometown was overrun, if you're the site of The Walking Dead, that sounds so cool on paper. It's like the way that, like, I sometimes say, like, my dream job is to be, you know, like a pizza chef, to be a pizza maker, and just to do that all the time, and I'll just eat pizza all the time. But they say you get sick of it if you're just doing it all the time. So I feel like the people who live in Walking Dead town probably are not huge Walking Dead fans.
Yeah, no, they seem to by and large not even. I think it might be one of those things where they watched it a little bit just to be like, I know that place. And then it sort of fell off. It's sort of like me with Person of Interest. Like, I watched the part that they filmed on our block, and then I kind of tune in and out with it.
Yeah. Yeah, Person of Interest is like a fantastic New York show. Very recognizable stuff.
Yeah, yeah, I do really appreciate that about it, but I haven't gotten the bug on Person of Interest.
I think that part of the problem there is CBS doesn't know what the heck they're doing with Person of Interest. I think that there's season 5, this is a whole neither here nor there, but I think season 5 has been in the can for like months and months and months, and there's just no sign of when that show is coming back. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's killing my husband. We went to the Comic-Con panel about Person of Interest, and he's been so excited for it ever since. Yeah. And who knows when we're going to get that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right. Well, let's talk Walking Dead. Let's Person of Interest for another podcast, perhaps, sometime.
Perhaps.
But let's talk about Hilltop a little more. What were some of the big things from the Hilltop that stood out to you? Where do you want to start with getting into the Hilltop and rolling into that storyline?
Well, I think it's kind of... I guess we need to talk about the road to Hilltop.
Yeah.
We need to talk about the little interlude where they stopped off to pick up some strays who, you know, they'd wrecked their car and they were holed up inside a building with a lot of really terrible imitation wood paneling.
Yes. It was awful.
It was pretty awful. And we got, I think, the first indication that the person who's getting Lucille'd in the TV show is going to be the exact same person who got Lucille'd in the comics.
You think so?
I think so. I think we got a pretty good setup for that.
All right, lay that out. What do you think is the big setup? Where obviously we're talking, and again, if you do not want to be here, if you've passed through the spoiler zone, this is the big one. We're talking about what very well may happen to Glenn getting killed at the hands of Negan. Probably, I would guess, at the end of the season, whoever's going to get killed by Negan will be happening then. You think that this show has, this episode backed up the claim that Glenn is going to be the guy who just, you know, his comic book fate is going to hold to the show. What do you think we got here that really solidifies that?
Well, the first thing we got was making the Hilltop seem totally irresistible to Glenn and Maggie.
Yeah.
And the second thing we got was Maggie really being set up to take that leadership role that she eventually does take, which I don't think that's an arc she can really fulfill if she's still got Glenn in the picture. I mean, I could be wrong here, but I think the biggest clue was that, oh, hey, by the way, we found the last OBGYN on the planet, and he happens to live at Hilltop, so, you know, maybe you want to move there too.
Right, yeah. A lot of the stuff that Maggie has coming up, I think we've talked about this before, it's hard to picture her going in that direction with Glenn still being there, because Glenn dying, I think, really does galvanize Maggie's character in a big way. And it really, you know, arms her up and gives her a big sense of purpose and gives her a big leadership role. And the show is already starting down that path as of this episode. So, yeah, I'm with you that it's hard to picture how Maggie's story really moves forward with Glenn in the picture if they're going the direction that they go in the comics. And this episode definitely indicated that that's where we're moving. Maggie is definitely stepping up as a leader.
Yeah. And I liked that they had her along from the beginning, and they kind of tied it back to the sort of internship that she did under Deanna.
Yeah.
And, you know, while we're at it, let's talk about the contrast between, you know, the leader of Alexandria in the comics and the leader of Alexandria on the show, and how that was improved so much by, you know, not having it be the exact same character who runs Hilltop.
Yeah. You think that Douglas and Gregory are too much like the same dude?
They were basically the same guy. Like, they were, you know, sort of megalomaniacal and lecherous and, yeah, not nakedly evil like, you know, a governor or a Negan, but still
like
not a guy.
Nakedly creepy.
Yeah, super creepy, and like, I want to be in charge because it gets me all the ass.
Right, yeah. Was that an actual thing with Douglas Monroe? Was he really just in it for the booty, so to speak?
It seemed to me like he was, because he creeped on everybody, too.
Yeah, he was a creeper. He creeped on Andrea, I remember.
Yep. And I just remember thinking when I got to that part, I'm like, okay, so everyone who's in charge in this world who's not named Rick Grimes is either super creepy or super evil.
Uh-huh.
Got it.
Those are the only options. You're super creepy, you're super evil, or you're Rick.
Yeah.
Or you have a tiger, and I don't know if we're calling that creepy. I think we called that hot.
Yeah, we did call that hot, and we got some pushback on that, but I'm standing by it.
I'm with you. I'm embracing it. No no take backs. I'm there. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm the person who came into this with comics first. You had Deanna before you had Douglas. I had Douglas before I had Deanna. But for me, it is absolutely no contest that Deanna was the better character. I think that Deanna Monroe was great. And I think you're right. I think that it would have just felt very similar if we just had like another old guy who's balding and has a beard as, you know, some sort of stuffy, you know, stick in the mud, digging in, heels in the ground type of leader, the way that we get with Gregory in this episode. And I will take Gregory every day of the week, because I don't know if you were a 24 fan, but I was a big 24 fan, and I love Xander Berkeley, and so I was very, very happy to see him in this role. I thought that he was terrific, and he is a super douche, this guy, so far.
Yeah. And, you know, we need more douches.
Yeah, need more douches. We're running low right now, so it's good that we've re-upped our supply. It's not 50% of the show's douches quite yet, but we are working on making that trade.
Yeah. Did you notice there was a little computer science report that came out about post-show recaps?
I did notice this.
And one of the most commonly used words in the Walking Dead podcast is douche. So I hope you and Rob are very proud of yourselves.
I'm surprised it's not like the number one.
That kind of surprises me as well.
We use it all the time. Certainly, you know, we use it a little bit on Game of Thrones. It comes up every now and then over there. But when it comes to Walking Dead, it really is one of the big, big words. Yeah, Jess is referring to this great report that Sean Falconer put together. It is a really incredible, you know, visual analysis of the post-show recaps universe is what he calls it. And it's, you know, looking at, you know, word analysis and language and the way that you know, certain podcasts line up with each other. We'll link to this in the show notes, because if you haven't seen it, it's really, really fun. There's something called the Wiggler effect, which doesn't involve pizza, which I feel like I've screwed up my job somehow, that is not, you know, part of the deal. But looking at the Walking Dead word cloud, there's a bunch of word clouds. Alexandria is the biggest word, and I'm trying to see how big douche is. Let's see if
not
I can
check.
It's not big enough. We got to work on it. Actually, it's pretty big.
It is pretty big, but it's not big enough.
So that is the word cloud of The Walking Dead. So we will post that in the show notes here. So what did you think of Gregory here? What did you think of Xander Berkeley as Gregory?
Oh, I thought he did a fine job. I'm not as familiar with the actor as you are, but he seems perfectly cast. He looks like the comic character. He's clearly a great actor. He comes off as like smarmy with just a hint of creepy.
Yes.
And you don't really like. You can still get the feeling, and he was such a complicated character, I thought, in the comics. Like, he seemed like he probably really did want to do the best thing for his people to keep them alive.
Right.
But he had limited, you know, he had limited practical resources to do that. He wasn't equipped to be the kind of versatile leader that someone like Rick could be.
Right.
Yeah. And I think the complexity, like, just in the, like, 15 minutes we've seen the guy now, I think this actor can pull that off.
He's great. I promise you, he's fantastic. He's a really, really great actor. But I think that, you know, the comics, it feels like it's a slower build that Gregory is an out-and-out scoundrel. In the show, he's just coming off so aggressively creepy and aggressively mean and aggressively jerky. But in the comics, I feel like it takes a minute before you realize that this guy's a coward.
Yeah, I suppose so. They don't really get into it immediately that nobody in the Hilltop knows how to fight.
Right.
And P.S., that's a lie because Jesus can kick anybody's ass.
That guy can fight.
Yeah, that guy can fight.
Yeah, he can fight. But they do take a while to get there. I was just reading that issue again today of arriving at the Hilltop. And one of the things, I didn't realize just how closely this issue was to the episode, but in the comic, it's Rick who's dealing with Gregory. Maggie is not stepping into this role quite yet. They're setting that up a little bit earlier on the show so far. But even in the meeting between Gregory and Rick, he screws up his name, which I thought was really funny. He calls Maggie Natalie on the show, and he calls Rick Nick in the comic. And Rick's like, "It's not Nick. Don't call me that." So I thought
aren't any good Nicks in the Walking Dead universe. Nobody wants that association.
It's not the name you want. That's not a name you want in the world of the Walking Dead. So I thought that was pretty fun. What do you think of the fact that we're setting Maggie up this early on? Do you think that this is good to start laying down that track right now?
Yeah, I think it's good because I think it also gives Maggie so much more at stake. Like, I really never got the impression when in the comics, when they make the decision, it's like, you know, 2 days after they get back.
Right.
Glenn and Maggie are like, yeah, peace out, Alexandria. Hilltop's so much better. You know, smell you later. We're out of here.
I believe that's verbatim.
Yeah, that is a direct quote. And I didn't quite get, like, you know, in the comics, Glenn and Maggie are frequently kind of off doing their own thing. Like, they spend a lot of time. They don't move to the prison right away. They spend a little more time on the Green family farm, and they're a little bit more independent. And here, they've been with the core group pretty much from the get-go.
Right.
And there needs to be a really compelling reason, something that's really going to sell it to them. And I think they both need to see the Hilltop. They both need to be sold on the idea that it's better for them and better for their baby. And that is being accomplished, I think, in giving Maggie a little bit more to do and letting her get a look at the place before Glenn unilaterally decides they're going there.
Yeah, I think so. I think that giving Maggie some utility in the choice is a really strong move on the show's part. And I think that one of I don't know what your read was on Maggie as a comic book character. If you want to let me know how you felt about Maggie as a comics character.
I loved her in the comics.
Yeah.
I thought, and also because I think Kirkman occasionally doesn't write women as well as he could, and the show makes up for a lot of the things that he does that I would quibble with.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Maggie from, you know, start to finish is a great character.
Yeah. I feel like they've really done a great job with Maggie on the show. And I think that boosting this kind of storyline a little bit early feels really in line with the Maggie we've seen on the show versus the Maggie in the comics, who I really like as well. But the Maggie in the comics is, you know, I think that we saw lots of shades of Sasha from, you know, back in, I think, season four, maybe back half of season five, when she was really angry, when she was really tortured, when she was really depressed. That's the kind of stuff that you really see from Maggie in the comics. And I feel like Maggie has been a lot more resolved and a lot stronger on the show, and her making moves like this feels a lot more like the Maggie of the show.
Yeah. Well, and it's one of those things like, and you know, George R. R. Martin is someone who also does this very well. It's like, there are many different types of strength, and you can be a strong character without necessarily being like a tortured badass.
Right.
And I think Maggie, she's almost like the Sansa Stark. She's good at like a political diplomatic side of things that, you know, it's a little underrated in this universe, but when it's needed, it's really needed.
It's going to be fun if that, you know, and not really if, but the further along we get in this show, that, you know, that sort of, you know, just to kind of keep harping on the Game of Thrones thing for a sec, like that sort of King's Landing type of thing, like that feels like that's going to be more and more on the show, maybe a little bit more of that political intrigue that we don't see so much on the show, that now that the world has opened up, that's the kind of thing that we're going to get to see a little bit more on the show. I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, yeah, I'm excited too. It's like you said, it's the Seven Kingdoms of Alexandria.
Right, exactly. What did you think of the Hilltop Brawl? How did you feel? How did that play for you on the show? That's another thing that was fairly close to how it played out in the comics.
Well, some of it was shot for shot from the comics, yeah, which was really amazing. And I thought, I mean, there's not much to say about it. It was pretty much directly taken out of the comics, except, you know, we'll throw a couple of lines to Daryl because Daryl is there.
Right. Yeah.
And a lot of this feels like you're reading the comics so closely to watching this on the show. Sometimes when they put Daryl in those situations, it feels like fan fiction. Like, this character is standing in for me, and I wrote myself into the Walking Dead universe. Like, he feels kind of like the Mary Sue in some of these instances, because I don't expect him to be there, and then he's there. And when he's doing something that's not, you know, shoehorning him into a comic scene, I like him a lot better.
That's really funny. I've never really thought of him that way, but when you think about it, it's hard to think about him as anything else. It's like, wait, what are you doing here? You are not supposed to be here. I have no idea what you are going to do next.
Yeah. Yeah, and sometimes it's great because it's a little bit of a wild card element, like the way he took out Negan's guys.
Right.
That's not in the comics.
Right, yeah.
You know, in the comics, they just kind of shoot everybody, and, you know, that's all good and well, but this was much more epic.
You bring Daryl Dixon into the picture, and a rocket launcher follows. Hard to complain about that.
Yeah, I got no complaints about that.
What did you think of there were moments from this, you're right, that were just like ripped straight from the comics. What my favorite was after Rick kills Ethan, and he delivers what? He just delivers that so perfectly. Just the whole, like, everyone looking at him like a total monster and him just being like, yeah, and what's going on? Why are you guys looking at me so funny?
Yeah, is this not how you guys handle things here?
This is not how you do things? And he also had the great, when someone's like, put the gun down, he's like, I don't think I will. Which is just a very casual aside in the comics. I thought that Andrew Lincoln sold that pretty well here, too.
Yeah, I will say there's one conspicuous absence of a character in these scenes that I think is actually a strength. And that is, I'm just very glad that, and maybe this will be proven wrong in the next episode, but we don't need Carl stowing away and becoming like the master negotiator at the last minute.
That's right. Yeah. Well, can you remind me on what Carl's role is in the Hilltop storyline, in this initial Hilltop storyline? I know that he stows away. What's the deal with Carl as far as you recall?
Well, you know, Maggie gets the line where she says, you know, you'll give us half of everything you have if we take care of this problem for you. And in the comics, that's Carl's line.
Yeah.
Carl jumps out of the, you know, wherever he's hiding, and he's like, hey, if we kill Negan, we want half your stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, well, this kid's precocious.
Yeah.
And, you know, nobody needs that.
Baby negotiator. He's the baby governor.
Yeah, and especially because I think at this point he's still very much prepubescent Carl. He's like 8 years old. And it's like, I'm so glad that we've had to shoot this on a much longer time frame, because I feel like moody adolescent Carl is so much easier to take than like precocious whiny little 8-year-old Carl.
I feel like we got through that stuff. You know, I think, you know, again, Walking Dead, it mixes and matches. Some things happen earlier, some things happen later, some things happen not at all. And I'm wondering what you think about this. You know, this stuff where Carl, he stows away in the van, he disobeys orders, he shows up at the Hilltop. We know that at some point in the future of the comics, he's going to stow away and show up at Negan's headquarters and all of that. But it feels like that sort of rebellious Carl, that already happened. You know, we kind of went through a little bit of that in season 3. I think by the time season 4 rolled around, he was mostly reformed, although he got really angry during Pudding Gate against his dad. I think he got a lot of that out then. Do you feel like Carl is going to continue to be more of an adult-like presence, or do you think that he is going to get back on an angsty track at all in future episodes?
I mean, we'll see flashes of it, but we definitely, there's another piece of the Carl narrative that I think we're going to be more or less done with. And that is that in many different beats in the comics, it was like they would have a bad guy in captivity and the bad guy would strike up a friendship with Carl and like kind of chat with Carl and be a little more candid with him usually in an attempt to manipulate him.
Right.
And Negan does this eventually. And I think we got to get some of that, but we don't get it with every single person that does it in the comics. And right. I think we did that once when they had the guy in the barn way back on the Green Farm.
Yep.
And we haven't needed to do that again. And I think we're better off because of it.
Yeah, even in the comics, I think when they capture Jesus for the first time.
Yeah, Jesus does that to Carl.
Yeah, Jesus and Carl become buddies, and Jesus is like, I knew you guys were cool because your son Carl is awesome. So we didn't really have any moment like that. We had Carl hanging out with Jesus for like 5 seconds in this episode, and that really felt like enough.
Yeah, and I kind of, that was more than enough if you're Carl when you think about it, because Jesus just like, you know, dropped the bomb that, you know, your dad's getting laid, yeah, and it's just like random dude hanging in your house, messing with your stuff. And oh, by the way, your dad's upstairs and he's naked and he's got your friend Michonne.
Yeah. How did he say? It's like your dad and your mom are coming down.
Yeah. Your mom and dad are getting dressed.
Yeah. Carl's like, wait a second. What?
Which I also thought that was a great shout out to the comics and the fact that like every child calls every adult that they're living with mom and dad. Right.
Yeah. We talked about that last week. Yeah. I hope that that's the end of it.
Yeah. I'm sure that I think Carl and Michonne are good enough friends that they're not going to change up the way they address each other anytime soon.
Did you like the way that Carl handled it on the show, that he was just, you know, pretty, just totally fine with the fact that Rick and Michonne are a thing now?
It disturbed me that he wasn't a little bit more like, God, Dad, I don't want to hear it. Stop talking about it, Dad.
It's like, and then what?
Yeah, because Rick was verging on TMI.
It just happened.
Like last night, like seriously, we were sitting on the couch and Carl's like, oh God, Dad, stop.
I gave her a Mentos and one thing led to another.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we saw Jesus.
And then we saw Jesus. It was great. It was a really good night, Carl. You should have been there. No! Stop! Too far. I liked it in the comics. Again, I was reading this a little bit, and he says, I think, you know, Carl really, he just like stumbles in on them at one point. He stumbles in on Rick and Andrea having just done it. And Carl, they're like, Carl, what's going on? And Carl's like, ah, it's all right. I know sex. I know what that is already, Dad.
And it's like, Carl, you're 18 years old in this universe. Of course you know what it is.
It would have been great if Carl's like, what did you do?
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. Yeah, so I thought it was fun. I agree. Maybe he should have had a little bit of a reaction like, Dad, I know that I seem like an adult. I seem like someone you can trust, and all of that's true, but I am also your son, and she is my friend, and I do not want to know about this.
Yeah, I would have liked a little bit more of that.
Another way that the Hilltop Brawl is different is Abraham's inclusion. And Abraham had a really big episode this week.
Yeah, Abraham's getting some character development and starting to make me fear for Abraham.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, there's almost no question that Abraham is dying at some point in these next few episodes. The only question for me is when and how.
Yeah, that's for me as well. And I think he's got maybe two left.
You think two left?
Yeah, because he's going to need to go back and dump Rosita.
Yep.
And get with Sasha. It would be really epic if Sasha was like, are you kidding me?
I know.
But I feel like he's got to do that because we're getting like our little glimpse of what took many, many pages in the comic.
Yep.
The romantic foibles of Abraham Ford, which nobody really cares about. And once again, Kirkman's a little obsessed with who's boning whom.
He loves it. He loves it.
He's
very daytime soap with that stuff.
Yeah. And I guess we get our little tiny nod to it where Abraham figures out what he wants. And of course, as with many people on this show, the second you figure out what you want, you die.
It is a way of this show. You do not want to be happy. You do not want to come to terms with this world. You don't want to be at peace because that's when you get Tyrese'd. You know,
yeah, or Bobbed.
Or Bobbed or Blue Sky Bobbed. Yeah, I think it's going to be Blue Sky Abraham pretty soon. How do you, you know, we talked about this a little bit last week in terms of, do we think that Sasha is going to be receptive to Abraham's advances? Did this episode lean you one way or the other in terms of that? I felt like it definitely left the door open for Sasha not feeling it.
Yeah, I didn't get the sense that she was feeling it. But on the other hand, I was naysaying Rishon for a very long time.
Right.
So what do I know?
Sure.
What do I know about the, you know, matters of the heart on The Walking, Dead.
Yeah, I think I could definitely go there. There's comic book precedent for the whole Holly storyline, but I do feel like it's going to be kind of this Shaggy Dog thing where they are setting Abraham up to be at the heart of this complicated love triangle that he's trying to untangle, and it's just going to get resolved, and then he's going to get shot in the face by an arrow pretty much immediately afterwards.
Yeah.
But I thought that maybe, just maybe, it was going to happen this week. The strong emphasis on Abraham in the very, very first scene of the episode, a lot of close-ups on his face, his eyes especially, during certain scenes in the RV when he's thinking about, when he's hearing that one guy, I think his name was Freddy, who they saved, and he almost stabbed that guy in the head, and Freddy talking about, oh my God, I saw my wife, my late wife, right before I thought I was going to die. And there was such an emphasis on Abraham that I wasn't ruling out that the final scene of the episode could have been Abraham's death.
Yeah. Well, and especially when he's involved in the skirmish, and he's lying there motionless for a very long time.
Yeah.
And I thought, is Abraham dead? And up until he like started moving around, I was like, maybe that's how Abraham goes out.
Yeah. Yeah. They could have just choked him to death there.
Yeah. Yeah, is this one of those moments of fake out? Like, you know, we got to feel like he's safe for a little while now because we thought he was dead and now he's not. Sort right. of like Glenn on a much smaller scale.
Oh man, they can't do that to us twice.
No, they really can't.
But they probably will at some point down the line.
Yes,
these
true.
Cruel writers of The Walking Dead.
They're so mean.
Oh, they're horrible. What do you think is, you know, with Abraham's focus on Glenn and Maggie's baby, and can you make pancakes in the apocalypse? Is that an appropriate thing to do? Dare you dream so big? Do you think that this is just further setting up some character development for Abraham so that it hurts worse when he's gone? Or is any of this a possible reprieve that this is a new storyline that they're gonna take him down?
I think he's got to be, if he's reevaluating his life on such a heavy level, there's no way he's not gonna die.
Uh-huh.
Like I think he's gone pretty soon.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you think it's gonna happen? Do you think it's gonna be the way that they do it in the comics? Is he just gonna get ambushed by the saviors and just get the arrow to the back of the head, or do you think that they're gonna embellish it at all?
They might embellish it. They might give him a little bit more violence. They might give him a little more meaning too, because that's almost like an axle death.
Right.
And I was really shocked in the comics when I got to that point, because he's just kind of mid-sentence. He just gets cut off and the arrow comes through his head. And that felt like a really kind of a punk ass way for him to go out.
Right. I think that's the point. You know, the point is like, you know, big trees fall hard, and like, you know, they don't have to have this glorious exit the way that so many action heroes tend to have. That really in this world, all it takes is one swift hit to the brain and you're toast. And I kind of liked that about Abraham. And the thing that I really liked about it in the comics is that he does, like, he keeps speaking for like he gets shot in the back of the head with the arrow. He's still talking in that panel, and then there's the gigantic panel where Abraham finishes his monologue and he is still talking. He just has an arrow protruding from his brain. I think that that's the kind of thing that you could probably only get away with in the comic.
Yeah, that seems a little bit far-fetched.
It's going to be hard to imagine them pulling that off on the show.
I mean, if doing that would stop a walker, it's probably going to stop a human being.
I think so. And I think that there's also probably now some setup for why his death could be drawn out a little bit more. In the opening scene of this episode where Abraham and Sasha, they're talking and he says, see you tomorrow. And she says, no, I've got this new thing. I'm going to be up in the watchtower. So talking about slicing up the Andrea story from the comic, Sasha, and I think they've been building this for a while, is definitely like the sharpshooter of the group. And I think that she's getting set up to be in that bell tower. And in the scene where the Alexandrians really fight the saviors for the first time in, you know, the late 90s of The Walking Dead, there is, you know, a big battle, and Andrea as a sharpshooter has a huge role in it and is just rocking people left and right. And at that point, Abraham's already dead. The arrow thing had already happened. He's not there when the fight begins. But I think if something were to happen to Abraham while Sasha is watching from the watchtower, I think you could really see some drama there.
Yeah, that could give her a little bit of a good character moment.
Yeah. Poor Sasha.
Yeah.
That will be rough if that's what
happens. She's going to be celibate for the rest of her life if that happens.
Do not come near me, Black Widow.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what more they're going to do with Sasha's storyline. If this is just like the constant cycle that they have Sasha on, it's like, I want to give her a better story than this.
Yeah, like, well, and who knows? We're getting into some uncharted territory with a lot of people, and she's another non-comic character.
Yeah.
They could take her just about anywhere.
Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of the non-comic characters are really treading water right now.
Like who? Like Daryl as well, you would say?
Daryl as well, I think. I would count Carol as a non-comic character, and we haven't even seen her.
No. Is this like the first or second time we've talked about Carol in this podcast? And I don't mean like all of the podcasts, although close.
Yeah, close.
You know, we talked about her a bit when you were saying you're a huge Carol fan, as am I, but she's really had very little to do in these first three episodes back.
Yeah, I mean, they mention her at least in this episode where Jesus is like, yeah, the cookies are really good. And Daryl's like, she's not here.
I loved that.
And I'm like, damn straight she's not here, Daryl. Where is she?
Where is she? Bring us Carol.
Ah, go get your boo.
We talked about this on the live show. Rob and I, we were kind of debating how Carol is going to react to Rick saying we're going to go to war on behalf of the Hilltop and we're going to set up a good thing with these guys because of this. How do you think Carol's going to react when she finds out about it?
I think she's going to be like, sweet, I'm going to blow some shit up.
That's what I said.
Yeah. But
that's what Carol likes.
Yeah. I think she's looking for an opportunity to be useful again.
Yeah. And you got to imagine that Morgan is going to be really, really against this. And I don't feel like that conflict between those two characters is over yet. And I think that that might be what we're saving our Carol and Morgan appearances for, is that those two are going to clash on this issue.
Yeah, Morgan did not look happy in the previews for next week.
No. I mean, he's got his whole Zen no kill policy still in place. So you can't imagine he's going to be psyched about this. But again, Morgan is another X factor now. He is also now a character that is not in the comics at this point. So I don't know. How do you think that Morgan is going to factor into this war against the Saviors?
Well, he might bro down with Jesus.
That sounds awesome.
They got a lot in common. They got their martial arts, and I could see them hitting it off and being friends. I could see Jesus maybe getting Morgan to come around to this war thing.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking that as you started saying that, is you could totally see Jesus being the kind of guy that's like, Morgan, philosophically, I totally get where you're coming from, but practically, we gotta make some exceptions, and these Negan people are really bad, and you're gonna see that.
Yeah, or like, how about you just come and like knock them out and we'll kill them.
That's a great strategy. You come in, you use your awesome stick, you knock some people out, you run away and just pretend like there was no second step.
Yep. You don't have to know. Don't ask, don't tell, Morgan. Yeah,
that would be a good policy. I feel like that's good. Speaking of Jesus, he did not get punched in the face by Rick.
Nope, he didn't. Maybe it was just a bridge too far to punch Jesus in the face.
It probably would be hard. I mean, I feel like with this show, we've done so much with Rick Grimes that like he's crossed so many lines and people mostly still seem to be compelled by the character. But maybe punching Jesus in the face is too much for America to handle.
Could be a little bit much.
Could be far. Could be too far. But
he's got a very beautiful face. We don't want to mess that up.
He is a very, very fresh-faced looking fellow. We talked about this last week, too. And this week, I really noticed it, that he really just has this angelic quality about him that is not present in comic book Jesus.
Yeah, it's true. It's very Jesus-y.
He even looked like super Jesus-y in some of these scenes where he didn't have his hat, he didn't have his coat, he didn't have his gloves. He just looked very biblical.
Yeah. Yeah, all he needed was like that white outfit with the red sash that Jesus has in all the pictures.
And he'd be set. He'd be there. Yep. Are you coming around on Jesus on the show? Do you like him right now? How did you feel about him this week?
I felt like he did a solid job. I mean, Jesus is such a fun character in the comics that I know I've got a lot to look forward to.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's screwing it up.
No, I think he's okay right now.
Yeah, he's okay.
Yeah. A couple other things from the comics to the show. This is the first appearance of Dr. Harlan, who is a minor character in the comics. He is still alive in the comics, I believe, but he's such a minor character that he doesn't really have much of a storyline that I can remember, other than being involved in the birth of Maggie and Gwen's kid. And I think that that might even happen off page.
Yeah, it seems like that happens during the time jump.
Right.
Like, we don't even really see, like, Maggie's not even, like, super pregnant at the time that Glenn dies. And after that, we don't see a lot of her. And then we pick things back up and she's running the Hilltop.
Right. Yeah. So, I don't know. I don't know what we're going to do with this character. Minor in the comics, seems to be a bigger deal on the show. How far into Under the Dome did you get?
The show or the book?
The show.
I got 1.5 episodes in.
Okay. I think that he's from Under the Dome. This actor who plays Harlan is R. Keith Harris, who I think is Shumway from Under the Dome, who is, he's basically just a dead body, I think. So
okay.
He's used to playing corpses in a show about corpses. This could be a good thing to have on his resume.
Yeah. I don't know. That show made me angry.
That's what I've heard.
But the book made me angry too. So
oh, really?
The
book did not make you any happier.
Yeah, it was basically like the show could have, if they're going to be an ongoing series, they could have taken out the terrible things that were in the book, and instead they made those a centerpiece.
Yeah.
It's like, what is wrong with you?
Other comic book stuff. I think this is the only other really kind of major, and not even really that major. The difference between Ethan, who is the guy that Rick kills on the show, also kills him in the comics. He is not trying to save his brother in the comics. He's trying to save somebody named Crystal. And I don't believe we ever see Crystal. I think Jesus has some sort of line where he says, if Negan has Crystal, she's as good as dead. We just have to assume she's dead. And we never see her again. So I don't know how this bodes for Craig, Jess.
Yeah, it's not looking good for Craig. Although I noticed that Crystal is actually, like, according to the Walking Dead wiki, Crystal is actually one of the people that's in that group that comes back.
Oh, really? On the show?
Yeah, on the show.
Interesting.
She's actually the woman that's in that group of people.
So, better luck on the show than in the books.
Yeah, good for you, Crystal.
Good
but,
for you, Crystal.
You know.
I don't think
you
need
for Craig.
Yes. It's really bad news for Craig. You got to imagine it's not going to work out for Craig. Hopefully someone is cast as Craig, but we'll see. I think Craig is going to be like he's going to be the Jacob of The Walking Dead, where we're just going to be asking, who's Craig, for many years now, I think.
Well, I mean, that worked out okay, didn't it?
I think so. I think it was mostly okay.
That's like the only latter season Lost thing I liked was Jacob.
Yeah, that's when things started to go off the reservation for me. So we'll see. I don't know. I'll hold out hope for Craig still.
Okay.
All right. We've got a couple of questions that were written into us if you want to dig into some of these.
Oh, questions.
Yeah. We covered a lot of this stuff already, but I think that there's some points that we can elaborate on. This was one from Josh Sumskis, who agrees with you about the Glenn thing, I think. He says, the showdown with Rick's group and Negan and his saviors draws closer. With Glenn being how he is, with not killing another person, do you think that Negan will see that as a weakness and target Glenn to kill to show Rick and his group a lesson in how the world works? They seem to be closely following the comic book, and they tricked us earlier this season with Gwen's fake death. I feel like they are really trying to pull the rug from under our feet in that regard and make for a horrifying season finale and actually follow through with killing Glenn. So Josh Sumskis is on your side on this, Jess, and I gotta say, I know we did our Negan draft, so we both have, you know, we've got some skin in the game in terms of we want to see this happen to somebody else, if only to score some points. Probably not, because we want to see most of these people live. But I do agree. I think that this episode furthered the case for it being Glenn. And I don't know about you, but every time I see Steven Yeun on screen, I'm kind of just counting the minutes. It's like, you're on borrowed time, man. I feel like it's almost a sure thing at this point.
Dead man walking.
Dead. Dead man walking dead. Yeah, I think he's in trouble.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, obviously I agree, but.
Yeah. The only other thing that I was thinking is, are we setting up, you know, Abraham, your number one pick on the board? Are we setting Abraham up to take that place? You know, if he is really, you know, he's the guy who really zones in on Glenn and Maggie's baby, and that really seems to turn something in him, and we both agree that he's probably not long for this world. Could he volunteer himself for that spot? Is that something that maybe we are getting set up on in this past episode?
That's true. But then I feel like we still got to do something with Glenn.
Right. Well, they could not kill him this way, and they could just kill him some completely other way next season.
That's true.
You know?
That would keep us on our toes.
It certainly would. This is from Jason Reed, who wants to know if Jesus is going to be a Daryl replacement, who he thinks. Jason says, I think Daryl is going to be the top candidate to meet the business end of Lucille. So Jason is Team Wiggler on that one. But do you think that Jesus is being groomed to kind of have that second-in-command role? And I think that this ties into what we were saying about, like, the Daryl fan fiction earlier. It's like, it's hard to imagine what happens with Daryl, because I feel like Jesus does take that role in the comics that Daryl currently occupies.
Yeah, it's true. And but we've also had people, we've had other people kind of fill that role in the comics. And, like, Morgan was that for a while. And Morgan kind of, by and large, wasn't that here.
Right.
So I think we got to find something for Daryl to do. And I think we are getting right up against the point at which we actually encounter Negan. And I got to think that we're going to stretch that out for at least the rest of the season. And so we need some filler. And I think that filler is going to feature a lot of Daryl.
And how do you think that that's going to come about?
I really honestly have no idea, yeah. But I think we're going to be stretching out the angst about the Hilltop and about, you know, the other, like, we might even get to the kingdom before we get to Negan again.
Whoa, wait, you think that we could get Ezekiel this season?
Maybe we could get Ezekiel.
Dude.
We at least get the existence, like, someone acknowledges the existence of it. And, like, you know, send Daryl out there to be the diplomatic mission to the kingdom.
That is an incredible idea. Because if he can't have his crossbow and if he's done with the rocket launcher, Daryl hanging out with a dude with a tiger sounds like good television.
That's true. And, you know, maybe they'll bang.
Him and the tiger?
Not him and the tiger. I don't think you can get away with that on premium cable.
Yeah, I think if Rick can't punch Jesus in the face, I don't think that Daryl can bang a tiger. I don't think we can go there.
I don't think so.
That's some Daryl fan fiction for you right there. I think you can find that on the internet.
That is bridge too far.
I did get a question. I tried to get this question purged from the list during the live show, but I was not fast enough. But somebody asked if I thought, or if Rob and I thought, that Daryl and Jesus could become a thing on the show. And I wanted to not address it on the live show because I don't want to tip the hand about Jesus' sexuality. It hasn't been brought up on the show yet. Let's see if that comes into play. But there have been questions about Daryl's sexuality in the past. In this episode, I thought that there was, you know, a brief moment where they really could have dug into it a little bit more, and he really just waves off any talk about romance or anything. Do you think that there's anything to this? Is this pure fan fiction, that there could be a hookup between Jesus and Daryl?
I would watch that. I would rewind it and watch it several times. Do I realistically think it's going to happen? I think they're going to keep Daryl an enigma for the entire duration of the series. I'm afraid Daryl gets no nookie.
No nookie.
Because he's the guy that they want to be all things to all people.
Yeah.
And once he hooks up with somebody, he's not hooking up with you, the viewer, and it's kind of a tragedy.
You don't want to eliminate possibilities.
Right, right.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. It would be hot.
It'd be super hot.
It'd be a thing.
I'd ship it.
It would be a thing. Well, let's talk about shipping. Our final question. This is from R. Philly, who wants to talk about Rishone and a gripe that he has about Rishone. R. Philly says, now that Rishone is official, I have to ask you guys as fellow comic readers if you're as surprised as I am that Carol didn't end up taking Andrea's place beside Rick. The groundwork was being laid between Rick and Rishone for some time, but I still always thought that was a misdirect. I expected that, much like he does with Andrea, Rick would eventually realize how very important Carol had become to him. Am I alone? Did we miss out on a golden opportunity here? Would that have been more interesting to you? What do you think, Jess? Would you have shipped Rarel and not the Daryl and Carol variety?
Well, I'm a platonic Daryl Carol shipper, because I think I've touched on this before. I think that both Daryl and Carol are such damaged people with such complicated pasts that I think romance is almost always the furthest thing from their minds.
Right.
And they're very good at, like, building up other types of relationships and having people be important in their lives, but I really don't see either of them getting super sexual.
Yeah.
And, like, if they were gonna, they would do it with each other. mm-hmm. and I don't think they're going to do it with each other.
Yeah, I don't think that I would have. I can't imagine Rick and Carol as a thing. Like they definitely seem like, I mean, and same with Rick and Michonne, where they both seem like they're soldiers on the battlefield together. But it really always felt platonic between Rick and Carol to me.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, I thought it was platonic between Rick and Michonne. So again, what do I know? But I do think Carol is platonic with absolutely everybody.
Yeah. Did you think that the show did a good job? I mean, we talked about Carl's reaction to Michonne. Did you like the show's general treatment of Michonne the morning after, so to speak, in this episode? Do you think that they did a good job with handling that new relationship? Or do you feel like, because I kind of felt like maybe it was a little too subtle.
Yeah, it was a little bit, although, you know, the part of like them holding hands.
Right.
That was a little too cute.
That's what I mean. It's yeah. Like, could we have a conversation about this, somebody?
Like, yeah, or at least like, or, you know, just let it be a little bit awkward between you because you don't know how to talk to each other.
Yeah.
And then that kind of opens it up for Abraham to realize what went on.
Right.
And I like that a little bit better. He's like, why are they being so weird to each other? They must have done it. Hey, Daryl, did you hear about this?
Yeah. What did he, they were umping Buglies?
Umping Buglies.
Umping Buglies. I think Rob is going to be so disappointed when Abraham gets killed.
Yeah, well, who doesn't love Abraham?
It's going to be a tough night of podcasting.
Yeah.
It's going to be really difficult. And then we had one last question, but we touched on this, from Andrew Brockman, who said, last episode showed us the first example of Maggie stepping up to be the leader she will become in the future. How do you think the show did in setting up this arc, and will the show only watchers buy that shift in her character? It sounds like you're buying it. It sounds like I'm buying it. Do you think that show only watchers are going to be buying that shift in Maggie's character?
I think they're going to buy it a lot harder than people who read the comics.
Uh-huh.
I'd be on board with it. I think they've done enough to develop her slowly over time. I guess knowing that's where she ends up, they're able to kind of lay the groundwork earlier.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think it's good that they're starting it now. I think it will make a whole lot of sense when we get there. I think that it still would have made sense. I think that, you know, Maggie has proven herself to be this type of character in the past. So I think it's all good. Very, very happy about the Maggie stuff. Let's wrap up here, Jess, unless you've got anything else from this episode.
I do not have anything else.
Do not have anything else from this episode. All right, so that was Knots Untie, episode 11 of season 6. The next episode, episode 12, is called Not Tomorrow Yet, directed by Greg Nicotero. Greg Nicotero seems like he always gets the awesome episodes, so let's see how that works out, because I kind of thought that maybe next week was going to be a little bit talky, but there's certainly possibilities. You know, if Abraham's death is within, you know, a range of 2 episodes, it could happen next week. It's certainly possible.
If that's a Nicotero episode, I don't feel good about Abraham.
I feel bad about Abraham. Yeah.
Yeah.
You want the main zombie effects, special effects guy on hand for that episode in a big way.
Yeah, I think you do.
I think so. All right. Hashtag, I feel like Daryl fanfic is pretty good.
That's pretty good. It's probably already in use, but
it might be. Let's co-opt it. Let's see.
All right.
We'll take over some Daryl fanfic. Keep it clean. Tweet that to Jess. She's at Haymaker Hattie. I'm at Round Howard. We'll be back with another episode of the Book Club next week. Thank you, guys. Keep those questions rolling in. You can send it through twd@posterrecaps.com is our email address, and you can go through our feedback form on the website, posterrecaps.com/feedback. Just put spoiler in the title, and we will know that you are talking to the Walking Dead Book Club. Subscribe to what we're doing, posterrecaps.com/iTunes for everything, posterrecaps.com/twd iTunes for the Walking Dead feed, and we will talk to you guys next week. Take care. Bye.